Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Listen. Think. Learn. Grow. Live. 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 Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Hello and welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, April 24th, 2019. I'm Dr. Doug Kelly here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, everyone. Glad to be here.
And Michael Kelly with us as well.
Good evening, everyone. Always happy to be here.
Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. And I'd like to apologize for last week. Sorry we couldn't do the program. I got sick for a change. I haven't been sick in so long. I don't know, maybe 10 or 20 years. And I think I got hit with strep throat, I believe, and then a little bit of laryngitis. My voice is still not 100% back. And then I got a sinus infection. I mean, it just knocked the heck out of me for about at least 10 days so far. I mean, this is the first day I've actually felt somewhat back to normal. So it's been, it was a whopper. And I haven't been sick like this in probably at least 20 years. It was amazing. So I'm still getting back there, getting my strength back up, and appreciate everybody's comments and well wishes for me. So tonight our topic is how to change the world, and Michael's going to start us off on this.
Well, you know, I think that for a lot of us, the desire to change the world comes about in a very strong way in our teenage years, in our 20s. When you're still, young, you're idealistic, you see how things are, you have this burning passion to kind of change things. And the reality of really changing the world is kind of a nuanced thing, and I think that there's a few things to consider. One is that the world is in a constant state of change, so it's going to change with or without our action, and by doing all of the things that we talk about every single week, and by doing all of the things to make our own lives better, we are changing the world that we live in, which is changing the direction in which we're growing, which is changing the world. Now, I think we can have a more direct impact on certain areas, because, well, broadly, we want to live in a, an enlightened world where we treat each other fairly and equally and justly. But there are times where we need to come together to actually change specific things about the world in the here and now in broad ways. And we do that not as individuals, but we do that as groups of people. We build coalitions. We work together. It's many, many people working together to change the world, more than it is any one person, even if they are great in being able to orchestrate this and coordinate this. But, there's a, I don't know who to attribute this to. It's an old saying, an old quote that was, you can't change the direction of the wind, but you can adjust the sails. That goes back to what I was talking about a little bit earlier, where it's just these minor changes are going to influence the way our world develops. Maybe that smile to a stranger, that kind act, sets in motion a chain of events that leads to bigger and greater things in terms of a positive impact. It can have that butterfly effect. And then also, just to kind of summarize, there are times where we're going to come together to fight for what we believe in, to maintain and keep what gains we've made in an enlightened culture and a just society, and holding on to those gains and not letting them go. So I think that there's a lot of different ways that we change the world. We do it every single day by the small actions that we make and the decisions that we make. But then we can also do it in very big ways. So it's that balance between idealism and realism. You don't want to lose that idealistic spirit, because there's an energy to it, and there's a positivity, and it brings new things into the world. But it, you, life has a way of dampening it to a degree when you're hit with the realities of life, that there are things about human nature that we can't change. Well, that shouldn't take, you know, that shouldn't discourage us from trying to make those positive changes in the world and trying to have an impact. So changing the world means a lot of different things, and I think it's a broad-based continual effort, constant vigilance.
Yeah, great points. Dr. Hunter, you have anything you'd like to add?
Well, I think a lot of people, while you were talking, Michael, one of the things that came to mind is when people want to make a change in the world, the tendency is to pick on the things they feel they can control, which generally is it trespasses on the do no harm, do right, and meaning that it infringes on other people's rights without consideration. And what I mean that often is with regard to a religious concept, for instance, or people wanting to make a social change and getting people to stop smoking, or, you know, there's all these crusades that people go on that certainly may affect us socially, but sometimes its impact is in a negative way. Mm-hmm. So we have to be very careful about what we want to change and how we go about that. So, you know, I know we were talking briefly before the program, be the change that you want to see in the world. And it's basically, if you don't want somebody telling you what to do, don't be telling other people what to do, provided, you know, again, that, you know, I'm going to go back to it. It's, do no harm, do right. Well, then what is the right thing is often, you know, where we get kind of messed up and wanting
absolutely
to create a better,
well,
we want
to, I think that's
creating a better world. Yeah,
I was just going to say, I think that's a great point and an important distinction to make, because you're right, when certain people, I don't really want to get on this bandwagon, but there's a huge movement of anti-smoking thing, and hey, these people are, they have the best of intentions and they want to change the world, but really they also want to control the habits of others, and we're all adults to make our own choices. And I think as metaphysical humanists, we believe in that individuality and the freedom of choice, and I think that's a great point to make and a great clarification.
Whereas I think that if we look at something we want to change, rather than picking on small things that affect an individual, I think it's to also consider the bigger pictures. You know, we've got more about behavior, you know, and extending kindness. Mm-hmm. And when we see a negative or harmful behavior, then we stand up to that harmful behavior, and I think we
exactly
have a way better impact socially when we do that, as opposed to picking on, like, there's so many rules right now in the world because somebody got a brilliant idea, and, well, okay, seatbelts are not a bad thing, you know, but when you start enforcing seatbelts, kids' seats, and these seats, and they have to be, you know, less than 2 years old, and you have to change them every 2 years. Well, that's marketing. That's not about safety. That's about marketing. And yet somebody got a big idea, and somebody else thought, well, that's to make us safe. And I think part of the problem is we really want to believe that other people have our best interests at heart when they make rules, when we need to discern which is something that betters their life as opposed to being, let's say, the right thing, you know, so that we stop fixating on the small stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And again, seatbelts is a good thing. Kids' car seats, a good thing. But when we start nitpicking about how many pounds a kid has to be and how many, you know, what kinds of things they have to have, and it goes on and on and on. But usually what's happened is these rules start when somebody's been harmed and they get angry So they get on a crusade to change the world. And look, I'm not opposed to a lot of good changes, but generally it's one out of 1,000 who goes on a crusade, and the other 999 say, hey, that's not a big deal, I don't care, you know.
Exactly.
But before you know it, we've got 100 rules, and we say, whoa, wait a minute, what happened here? You know, because it got carried away.
Exactly.
That's just my point.
Well, I think, crusades, aside from the very obvious example, are almost always bad things, are they not? It's one person searching for their vision, whereas real, lasting, meaningful change comes from millions or billions of voices, you know, changing together in broad kind of ways. And really the kinds of things that I think about when I talk about making change and making a better world to live in, I'm talking about basic human dignities and humanitarian crises that are going around, and what kind of society do we want to live in. And we can make our own individual lives and communities better through positive actions and things, but you know, I think it's that humanity needs to be about it when it comes to its ethical evolution.
Well, I think it's about having long-term thinking instead of short-term reaction and result. And, you know, it's kind of everybody says, oh, you know, this will be easier on the taxpayer if we have this, this, and this, and we privatize it. Well, that sounds great for the moment, but how does that affect us socially long-term? In Canada, we don't have private prisons. They're government prisons. In the U.S., it's private prisons. Well, for private, what happens? Well, the longer you keep people in jail, the more money the company makes. Mm-hmm. So what does that do? It starts out as a good idea in the beginning. How is that long term? And I think that's another way we can start to look at how do we make the world a better place, is to get out of the short term results kind of thinking and look at the long-term progress that we want to make socially.
Oh, absolutely. And you can look at things that have actually worked. Like, for example, you're absolutely right about the for-profit prisons. We also have state-run prisons, government-run prisons, that always are safer, more better managed, and have lower, what's the word I want to use?
Recidivism.
Thank you for taking that leap for me.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's a great point. That's the kind of thing we're talking about. What kind of world do we want to live in? And it's, you know, we build it every day with all of our actions, and it builds up into something much bigger. But.
And I'd just like to throw in a couple of points to it. Dr. Hunter, you go ahead and finish your point, and then I will.
Well, and I think we have to look at how we are often, as a culture, in a North American westernized culture, too quick to jump to conclusions when we have fewer facts and not enough information. And that requires some self-evaluation, too, I think.
Good. And I'll throw in some comments, too, on this, you know, how to change the world, make it a better place. And before I do, I just want to invite any of you who would like a card pulled from our Inner Oracle card deck, put your name in the chat room. But the thing about our school and our church, the common denominator, if you will, is that so many, if not every single one of our students, come to us wanting to make a difference, wanting to change the world. And it's all, they're all noble endeavors. And what could be more noble than wanting to make the world a better place? It's a noble calling. And so it's common among all metaphysical humanists, our students, everybody wants to make a change. And sometimes, and we've all been there, right? I'm going to go change the world. We're going to make this happen and make that happen. And some folks are successful. I mean, one person can make a difference. It's not very easy, and it doesn't always happen, but it's possible. And there have been people who have done that, and that's fine. But the easiest way to change the world for the better is to refocus on the most important aspect, and that's to focus on your own world. So how do you make the world better? You make your world better. It kind of like, you know, the question, what's the the purpose of life? Well, that's not the best question to answer. The best question to ask is, what's the purpose of my life? And so, in a similar way, instead of how can I make the world a better place, ask how can I make my world a better place. And there were many comments that came out in this discussion, and smiling at people, helping people, and just being uplifting. So, those are a few of my two cents. Can you have a few two cents?
Well, I might only add there is courage is something that we all do better to keep finding in ourselves and lessen ourselves on the complacency and have the courage to stand up and be counted. Because the more you know yourself, the less fearful you become. We become conscientious, a little bit cautious of the world. But when you see an injustice, participate to stand up against that injustice. So it's not just about being good and kind. It's about, I need to call that out and say something. Because silence, in my view, gives permission. All right. Well, we have some people wanting some cards tonight. Should we do what we did a couple of weeks ago and drawing two cards for someone instead of one?
Yes, let's.
Let's do that. Just,
draw the first card, and then we will temper it with the second card. Or it's like the first card's pulled in the context of the second card, or the second card provides some context. It could go either way, I guess.
Well, do you feel that the first card's more dominant than the second?
I don't know. Could go either one.
I'll follow Dr. Hunter's lead on that one.
Well, I would think so. First one's to the message, and the second's support to the message.
Good.
So, do you want to draw for Dr. Edward, Michael?
I'd be happy to. And Dr. Edward the first, I pulled. Wild card number 6, entropy. Within the cycle of life, there are useful energies, or low entropy, that can wane to uselessness, or high entropy. Their energy stands still, and their entropy increases. They no longer give value to the evolution of life. This can include an attitude or behavior that requires adjustment to once again take a new step in renewal and rebirth, thus lowering one's entropy. When one seeks to be part of the solution rather than part of the problem, that one lowers his or her personal entropy, and the world is a better place. And for your second card, or did you want to alternate, Dr. Hunter?
No, you go ahead. Go ahead.
All right. Well, I pulled number 31, Sacred Obligations. Bear with me. There it goes. A sacred obligation is a sacrosanct duty that any higher being would render for the highest good of all concerned. Sacred obligations include do no harm, do right, pay it forward, uphold individual value, value all life, extend tolerance and equality, control and change only what one is entitled to control and change, evolve and grow as a human being with higher awareness, promote knowledge, not fear, and more. Continue to aspire to your highest good by recognizing and fulfilling your sacred obligations.
I was just going to say, I thought you were done already, the sacred obligations that we have for the church are listed on the broadcast page near the bottom. And the thing that jumps out at me is the two cards, one was entropy and one was sacred obligations. Well, entropy is, not, basically it's things return to the dust. Things break, they wear out. So if you look at sacred obligations, they're all activities. They're all active. And they regenerate life, if you would. I mean, look at do no harm, do right, pay it forward. Reclaim your power. I'm reading from the broadcast page. Attune your life, leadership, paragon are all activities. They're all active. You keep doing that, it infuses life, and your entropy then is low.
Good one. Fran pulled number 9 for the room tonight, empowerment. taking your power back is literally all-powerful and absolutely priceless. It alone is the solution in principle for virtually every problematic circumstance in your life, from a bad relationship to spiritual harassment. Retaining your power means to retain your wholeness. When you're whole, you're empowered. Empower others by doing no harm and doing right. Sharing the best of yourself is encouraging and uplifting to yourself and others. Which goes back to our topic. Thanks, friend, for that, by the way. It goes back to our topic tonight about how to change the world. And, you know, we implied that all the way along about self-empowerment. But self-empowerment also requires you to know who you are. And so it's being able to debrief how we're programmed to think and ask ourselves questions like, is that something I believe truly, or is that something I was told to believe and I just assumed it? And that's empowerment. When you start to ask yourself those questions, you now become a part of the change in the world. So I just wanted to throw that in. I thought it was a great card for friend to pull tonight. Michael, we have friend next up, by the way. Maybe you'd like to pick a couple of cards for friend.
Well, of course. I am always happy to pull cards for friend.
Well, maybe you pick one and I'll pick the second one. How's that?
I think that's brilliant.
All right.
All right, and friend, for the first one, I have number 42, trust and integrity. Integrity means being true to oneself intuitively and sensibly. It is adherence to moral and ethical principles, soundness of moral character, and honesty. A trust betrayed loses integrity, and trust without integrity is empty. Trust, along with communication, is one of the two most important relationship traits. Move forward with integrity, remaining steadfast in the greatest relationship of all, yourself.
Well, now here's a great support to that. Number 33, preference principle. A mark of knowledge and wisdom is knowing when and how to offer an opinion or voice a complaint. If it's a matter of preference, yield. If it's a matter of principle, policy, or law, stand firm. It's important to know when and where to pick your battles. Be selective regarding the areas in which you invest your energy. I like that. And, you know, and it's a really powerful message in that. You know, it's a if it's a matter of preference, yield. Because it's just a preference. But if it's a matter of, as we were talking about too, and it goes right back to our topic, I think it kind of weaves in.
I thought the same thing, absolutely.
You know, weaves into what you and I were discussing earlier, Michael, about, you know, having that courage to stand up and what, how do you want to make, you know, a change? Well, what are those principles, the policies, the laws, and being able to stand up when you feel that there is some kind of injustice. But back up if you think it's just a preference, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, great message for you, though, too, friend, if we take it into context and anything that you might be looking at in your life right now, and you're obviously going to, translate that subjectively and relate it. And she says, wonderful, thank you, in the chat room there. So, I mean, this, you know, it's a great discussion that we've been having. And again, just to put it out there, if anybody else, we have, you know, several people in the chat tonight. If you'd like a card, please just put your name in. One of the things that I think about frequently is, how can I change the world? I think about this a lot. And rather than something grand and in a huge scale, it's how can I affect my world? And by setting an example. And even in the face of, you know, being not so popular some days, and especially because I'm not a practicing Christian, where there's very often, you know, a lot of religious people around, namely Christians, teaching my kids to live as pantheists and my grandkids now, and having that courage. And the calmer I am with it, and the more matter of fact I am with, you know, what we just came back past Easter. And of course they did a, you know, a little egg hunt at home, but we had our Easter back in March, in the spring event. And so we can have these conversations about how different people believe different things, and without judgment and without criticism. But this is how we practice it. And if you have any questions, please just ask. One of the things that deters me from any kind of a belief system is when I'm not permitted to ask a question. And I take that right down into the dynamic of my private life with friends or family. If I can't ask a question, and not to infringe, but out of interest or curiosity, then I have to look at what that means. Because that's a different kind of energy than one that's free and calm and relaxing and, again, non-judgmental. And so just, you know, sharing those few thoughts that, you know, as we go through our daily lives, and, you know, what are your touchstones? How do you set your boundaries? What are your parameters? What do you look at? And before I, one of the things I repeatedly ask myself, probably every day, before I participate in something or talk about something, what do I hope to achieve and what good will come of this? So that's what I, you know, and if I can't answer those questions really honestly, then, or they do reflect something to do with ego, pride, or something else in myself, I stop, I reevaluate that, make those little tweak changes in myself, and then move forward with a different mindset.
That's a great testimonial there. I mean, that's great points, and it all comes back to, you know, making the world, your own world better. Michael, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, absolutely great points, and it's resonating a lot with, you know, what we've defined as the sacred obligations. I mean, it's all right there. You know, you're doing no harm, doing right, you pay it forward. All those things that we go through that list, it's about making your own world better, and I just think it was very well said.
You know, there's another comment Dr. Jean is saying in the chat. I also have similar experiences with family members who are Christian. You know, I people I meet in daily life, I just, when they say, well, did you have a nice Easter? I said, oh, I'm sorry, I don't celebrate Easter. And I do it so casually and confidently that it puts them in a place to ask a question rather than pass a judgment. Oh, well, what do you celebrate? Oh, well, we have this wonderful tradition, you know, in March, at home, and this year was a full moon, it was great. And now they're asking more questions. And I love that, because it's that comfort. And again, the more comfortable you are, they can't help it. But when it comes to family members, Dr. Jean, I've had the experience where I don't communicate with a lot of family members, probably most of them. I'm considered the radical, but they all have a club. You know, one thing about families is there's a bond that we all appreciate, genetic, otherwise, but there's also this emotional history, and everybody wants everybody to fit. And you have to be able to fit within the context of their general belief systems. And once in a while, there's the white sheep of the family, like me, not black sheep, I'm the white sheep, I say. And, you know, who says, no, I don't believe in that. Well, then suddenly there's something wrong with you. So unless I lived to their expectations or their standards and what they believe, then I can't be a part of the club, so to speak. And I just don't feel like I need that kind of membership. I really don't. And I think it's more about opening the mind and moving forward. I do not criticize people for what they believe, and I refuse to have that same, you know, anything otherwise imposed upon me. So that's where I stand. Otherwise, I'd love to have conversations with family members, but there's always that, aren't you coming to church? No, thank you. Well, but there's going to be, and they are relentless and never give up. So I just avoid it. That's all.
Good points. All right. A couple of things we're going to, I want to mention before we wrap up the program tonight is we have our annual graduation ceremony coming up here in about
May 4th.
Week and a half. Yeah, May 4th. For students of Metaphysics Institute, IMHS, and Thomas Francis, students who have earned their bachelor's, master's, or doctoral degree in the past year, we'll read their name. We'll read the name of anyone who's graduated with one of those degrees, and in some cases they'll have more than one, so we'll read the highest degree. But if you haven't seen the details on your dashboard, go log into your school and look at the dashboard for information. There's a countdown timer for the exact time. It's going to be May 4th, 9 p.m. Universal Time. You know, that's UTC, coordinated time. So you'll have to use the time converter and figure out your own local time. For example, Eastern, it's going to be 5 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Central, 3 p.m. Mountain, 2 p.m. Pacific, and so forth.
That's me. Pacific.
Check your time and understand that when that countdown timer gets down to zero, that's when we're starting. So if you watch that timer, because if your time converter calculations are in error, we're going to start when that thing reaches zero for everybody.
That's great.
So that's one thing. And another thing I want to – 2 p.m. Pacific. She's way on the other side of the world, sort of, not really. Anyway, so that's one point. The other point about graduation is there's a roster of everyone who's graduating, and it's there with the information. Just click on it, look for it, read it. And if you earned a new degree in the last year, since the last graduation, make sure your name is on it. You know, I'm pretty sure I got everybody's name, but you know, sometimes we can make mistakes. So make sure if you think you should be on it and you're not, email us. Email me and ask about it. Use usual school emails. So that's one thing. So don't forget that. You can invite your parents. Your parents. What is this? PTA. You can invite your family. Hey, it's attributed to the sickness. You can invite your family, friends, family, and they can all listen. You might want to just listen together and then go and celebrate. That'd be cool. The other thing that I wanted to throw out there on the table is the time of this program on Wednesdays. We do it 10 p.m. Eastern every week, and I'm just wondering, we're missing out on some folks who feel that's just a little bit too late. I don't know if it matters to everyone or not, but think about it, and what would your feelings be on changing the time of this program to, and I'm going to use Eastern time, you know, instead of 10 p.m., perhaps 9 p.m. or 8 p.m. Now, that means it's going to be an hour earlier, 2 hours, whatever we decide, for you. So think about that, and if that means you cannot participate or join us live, then let us know. But if it doesn't matter, then it might open up the opportunity for others to join in, for other people in later time zones. Comments?
I was just going to add to that especially in the modern age, we've become used to that on-demand, you know, style of taking in new information and things. And while, you know, of course we love it when people listen to the archive and listen to other postings, there's really something fun and special about being in the live, you know, live broadcast, live chat part of it. I mean, you can always listen to the broadcast or podcast, wherever you want to term it later, but I think you get a little something extra out of it when you can find time to be at the actual chat. So if we can find a time that works best for everyone, that's great.
It was dropped out for me for a minute. Okay, so appreciate those comments. Folks, we appreciate everybody's kind time and attention tonight. Thanks to those listening to the archives as well. We appreciate that. We'll be back next week with other topics. Thanks to Dr. Hunter and to Michael. And hopefully I'll be more among the living next week, too. So thanks, everyone. Until next week, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night.
Good night, everyone.
Good night, everybody.